are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. I was sent by the British Church to train for ministry at Luther King House in Manchester. After a lengthy application and interview process that felt like a reality dating show, we courted the interview committee trying to be their perfect match in person and on paper. In my intake, 10 applied, 6 were interviewed, 5 accepted for training, and only 4 got a date as working ministers. Like the famous Baptist minister it was named for, Luther King House was originally a Baptist institution before it became a partnership shared by many other nonconformist traditions, including ours. There is a portrait of Dr. King in the foyer and a plaque honoring his prophetic spiritual legacy, but that portrait wasn't always there. For many years, the Baptist principal refused to have Dr. King's portrait on the wall or any reference to him in the school's literature. Why not use such a great recruiting and morale-building resource? Well, apparently, the principal had read a biography of Dr. King that highlighted, along with his many well-known achievements, what the author of the biography described as Dr. King's, quote, compulsive sexual athleticism. Meaning Dr. King was, among other things, recklessly priapic. He screwed around a lot, and not always with his wife. This is apparently true. The FBI had been spying on him since the 50s and had amassed plenty of evidence for this. But for the Baptist principal of Luther King House, this shadow side of arguably the greatest religious leader of the 20th century was enough to disavow him, and the great good Dr. King also certainly did. So not an especially balanced regard, is it? This highlights, for me at least, a key point of difference between ours and other faith traditions. Our first principle, as many of you know, affirms the inherent worth and dignity of every person. What it does not affirm is that every person is inherently good, nor that every person is inherently wicked, that bad old doctrine of original sin and the fall of man. It does not say, that principle, that our aim as a church is to purify us into some kind of whiter-than-white, goody-two-shoes piety. Simply says that every person, good, bad, and indifferent, is inherently worthy of respect and dignity. Think for a moment about how radically that differs from the good or bad, black or white, saved or damned, thinking of mainline traditions. Yet still there is, amongst more zealous Unitarians, the vestiges of the old Christian quest for salvation through the achievement of absolute moral purity, through dietary restriction, through eco-cleanliness, or through language policing. But salvation through moral purity is not and has never been our understanding of human nature. As one of our departed older members used to tell me, what attracted her to Unitarianism in the first place was that we were always, quote, more balanced in understanding and accepting human foibles than other traditions were. We Unitarians have the free choice to become better, of course, but because we are inherently blessed with that basic freedom, rather than damned with basic wickedness, we are already saved. That's the universalist strain in our tradition. The Baptist principle, being a Baptist, had that more traditional view of our need for purification to be washed clean in the blood of the Lamb. But indeed, only the impotent are pure. It was beyond his imagining apparently, that Dr. King's creative moral potency and his procreative sexual potency were drawn from the same inner life force. Dr. King's moral example stands not in spite of, but because of the whole complex human he was, both spirit and flesh. The human spirit is not ethereal, but enfleshed, and you can't actually separate spirit and flesh, at least not while living this life. This world needs badass people. To be living full and free, we need the badass in ourselves. And this talk isn't about the badass in Dr. King. This is about our bad selves.
Poem by Robert Bly, who is an American poet of Norwegian descent, who was born in Minnesota in, I think, 1926. A man told me once that all the bad people were needed. Maybe not all, but your fingernails you need. They are really claws, and we know claws. The sharks, what about them? They make other fish swim faster. The hard-faced men in black coats who chase you for hours in dreams. That's the only way to get you to the shore. A lazy part of us is like a tumbleweed. It doesn't move on its own. It takes sometimes a lot of depression to get tumbleweeds moving. Then they blow across three or four states. This man told me that things work together. Bad handwriting sometimes leads to new ideas. And a careless God, who refuses to let you eat from the tree of knowledge, can lead to books and eventually to us.
Thanks, Peter. Speaking of potency and lust, I've never used the online dating apps that are so common now. I've always met my own sexual partners the old-fashioned way. Just find someone with a lower self-esteem than yours and, you know, you're away. I'm kidding. I'm told these sites require you to commodify yourself by identifying only your positive attributes, so as not to scare people off with the whole more complex, messy truth. Well, nobody selects a partner for their bad qualities, unless you're a masochist. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But in a cultural economy that thrives on people having a poor self-image, which is, of course, always relievable by purchase, healthy, balanced self-regard is something of a revolutionary act. Which is to say, a balanced self-regard is rare and perhaps not so easy to do. To demonstrate for yourself, how easily could you name your best qualities? What would you say your best, most shining attributes are? The ones you'd be happy to put out like a lamp on a stand for the whole world to see. But really, to hell with false modesty today. What qualities are the best of you? Maybe the qualities you're proudest of. Intelligence, artistic talent, sense of humor, caring, loyalty, common sense. Think about one or two of them now and share them with your neighbors, not with your partners. I'm not causing any couple fights here today. I say, well, darling, I think my best attribute is my sense of humor. Oh, God, you've got to be kidding. Find somebody that you're not partnered with and share one or two of what you think your best attributes are. Thank you, Professor. Just for a couple minutes. Okay. They're okay. You had your chance. Now, was it hard or easy to think of them? Was it hard or easy to think them up? And if you thought them up, was it hard or easy to share them? It's going to be different for each of us, but healthy self-promotion may be more natural than we think. Because from the time we enter this world we did not make, we are continually becoming socialized. That is, we work to fit in by constructing a version of our messy, complex selves that society deems socially acceptable. Something called a persona. A sort of shiny front that's visible in the light for all to see. This persona has its uses. It's a survival mechanism. It's useful for social success and therefore for passing on your genes. But as we become socialized and construct this socially acceptable self, all of the qualities in ourselves that are deemed socially unacceptable, maybe the things about ourselves we've been taught to hate or feel shame about by religion or parents or peers or the media, these bad things we learn to hide and deny. We enshadow these parts of us, and the accumulated unexpressed energy of these antisocial qualities becomes a shadow self, a dark side, a kind of photographic negative of your colorful Kodachrome self-portrait. In order to live as human beings in the world, we cram into our shadow stuff we don't want people to see, and so maintain that shiny, bright-lit shop front we present to the world. This shadow side is made mostly of primitive, negative, socially or religiously negated emotions and impulses like sexual lust, power strivings, selfishness, greed, envy, anger, rage. Whatever we are taught to see as evil, inferior, or unacceptable becomes part of our shadow. It's the counterpoint to the persona we and others are more conscious of, because the persona is what we've put out in the open. So this shadow self is the price of being a social being. Making ourselves socially acceptable comes, like all things, at a cost. Our best and brightest qualities, therefore, have shadow flip sides. For example, a person whose best quality is, say, flexibility, may easily be a pushover, having enshadowed their natural aggression. A person who's always caring for others first may be codependent, having enshadowed their natural self-seeking. One who relies on their common sense may be incurious about any new knowledge that might confound them, having enshadowed their slothfulness. A steady person may have enshadowed their animal spontaneity, and a person who preens their intellect may enshadow their feelings. Think of those best qualities you identified again, the ones you shared earlier. Can you imagine, can you see, the shadow side they cast, the flip side that comes with them as night follows day? So the evil we do to ourselves and others stems, ironically and paradoxically, from trying to be purely good boys and girls. Think of the great evil figures of recent history. Hitler, Stalin, Pol Pot, they were all trying to purify their world. Hence the enormous shadows that they cast. Getting to grips with our own shadow side requires a fearless and searching honesty. But having a shadow side, which we all do, does not mean you are unworthy. It does not mean you are wicked. It does not mean you are damned. It just means you are human. Which to confirm, let's sing together our second hymn. We're going to sing, this is a one-verse hymn, and I want you to sing it three times. The first time, we sing it to ourselves. The second time, we're going to sing it to people around us. And the third time, we're going to give it back to the universe that made us. So Neil will play it through once to familiarize yourself with the tune. Please stand as you're able. This first time, this is you singing just to yourself.
How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul.
Now put your gaze around the room and sing to each other.
How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than love?
connected to my soul. Give it back to the universe it comes from. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. Oh, wasn't that nice? This paradoxical way of thinking about ourselves comes, of course, from the famous psychologist Carl Jung, who did an extensive study of world religion and mythology to draw it from. The persona and the shadow offers a way of coming to understand and accept ourselves fully through an inner journey down into the unknown dark, the so-called hero's journey myth, toward wholeness, which of course shares a root with holiness. If you think about it, persona and shadow reflects physical reality. In the physical universe, everything in the light throws a shadow. Now, shadows are real. They're not illusions. They're really there, but bear in mind, they bear only a passing resemblance to the lighted object. It's a picture. It's an incomplete picture. I mean, for example, your physical shadow is two-dimensional rather than three-dimensional. And shadows distort easily, according to your proximity to the light. The closer you get to the light, the bigger the shadow. The further away, the smaller. And because of its capacity to deceive and its looming distortion as we begin to look at it, we generally don't look at our shadow self, which is not easy to look at in the first place because we've hidden these things from our conscious awareness. And if we do try to look at it, our shadow can be experienced as really quite scary and shaming to us. But for wholeness and for health, we must not only seek and look at our shadow side, but find ways of integrating this wild thing, this wild, untamed, antisocial self with our persona, our shiny sales pitch to the world. This integration is crucial because if unmanaged and unintegrated, our shadow side becomes a source of suffering for ourselves and others, especially when we are under stress or fatigued or intoxicated or feeling threatened. The shadow side can be triggered into temporarily taking total command of the conscious will and just leaping out. This is not merely a moral, but a spiritual issue. Any spiritual system that avoids understanding and integrating our shadow is a pseudo-spirituality, a fake spirituality, a spirituality in denial, because the shadow is a primordial part of our enfleshed human inheritance. It can never be eluded. It can never be excised. It can never be jettisoned any more than we can cut out the reptilian and mammalian parts of our brains that prompt antisocial urges. Our shadow can only be recognized, negotiated with, and managed. Bringing your shadow side into consciousness and integrating it is a journey to spiritual maturity, greater spiritual maturity, because in doing so, we hold ourselves accountable for the reality we help create. Without work in this area, there can be little chance of deep, nourishing relationships to other people or any true relationship to any divinity we might be striving for. So how can you begin to recognize yours? The defense mechanism known as projection is a clue to your shadow. Unconsciously casting your bad attributes onto others so as to avoid confronting them in yourself. Projection happens not only in individuals, but in groups and religions, entire countries. You see it in any contentious conflict where the other, the outsider, the enemy, or the adversary is scapegoated, dehumanized, demonized. The shadow is most destructive when it's repressed and projected like this, and it shows up in behaviors ranging from neurosis to psychosis to irrational interpersonal hostility and bullying and even violence. What you resist persists, and what you repress builds pressure and will out. Take the classic story of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, a cautionary tale of the repressed shadow, if there ever was one. The excessively good, almost saintly Dr. Henry Jekyll, a goody two-shoes, is at times taken over, body and soul, by his equally evil shadow, the depraved, psychopathic Edward Hyde, his complete opposite, not in spite of Jekyll's goodness, but because of it. I don't know how much the former principal at Luther King House, I don't know much about him, but I'd be betting that his demonization of Dr. King may have had something to do with his own enshadowed sexuality. How very British, after all. How can your shadow, once recognized, be integrated into a whole self? It's healthy to recognize, for example, and as a guide, when you experience normal base instincts like food, sex, fight, and flight, it's good to recognize these. In recognizing and affirming them as wholly natural, you can more mindfully work out appropriate ways to express them. An aggressive impulse, for example, recognized, is one that can be channeled into behaviors that won't get you arrested, at least. Physical outlets can help. I don't know if you know about these, but these are called rage rooms, which are all the rage currently. You don safety equipment, you get a baseball bat, and you get sent into like the proxy of a lounge room and go to town. I'm thinking of opening one here in Adelaide as a sort of franchise. Everybody who drives the Victoria roundabout is required to go to the rage room. A lustful impulse, as another example, a lustful impulse can be validated and channeled into your fantasy life rather than acted out upon some hapless other and called love. Jung sees the most effective way of managing our shadow selves, however, is to have a creative outlet. Get it? Something that draws on the dynamism between the persona and the shadow, something that allows you to open up and do something with that writhing can of worms, the complex human psyche. And by the way, this is the one upside of the shadow. It fuels creative vision and is a door to authentic spirituality. Dr. King would tell you, if he were alive, but he was killed not for his sins, but for his prophetic power. And it is not beyond imagining that he drew the vision he created from his shadow from a far earlier prophet, an obscure Galilean who preferred the company of prostitutes, thieves, drunkards, lepers, the socially outcast, the marginalized, the people in his society's shadow. Preferred their company to the scribes and the Pharisees and the pious in the light of the temple. Jesus Christ, properly understood, always subverts our easy, polite, black and white pieties. Love it or hate it, we need our dark side for more abundant living as balanced, whole human beings. So we might as well develop a more conscious and constructive relationship to it, which means, in short, to accept it and to treat it with respect and a measure of care. For myself, just as I cannot be and would never be Lily White, I would not be minister of a church comprised of anything other than human people. Messy, silly, fearful, passionate, creative, lost, struggling, and maybe even a bit dark and aggro at times. If Unitarianism had only six whole and living Dr. Kings, creative, vision, and lust, and all, we would never be concerned for our future, or our vision, or our impact. But this is not Luther King House. This is not a Baptist house. This is not a house where we think only on your sins. This is a Unitarian Universalist house, and in this house, we accept you as you are and think the best of you. So make friends with your dark side. We have all eternity to be pure spirit, maybe, when we shuffle off this fleshy mortal coil. Amen.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.